This is number 0083, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0083. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Mark DiVincenzo, who is the author of Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb.
A lot of people don't know this, but if you lost your pinky, you'd lose 50% of your hand strength. 50%. The downside to a pinky is it's on the end of your hand, it's less protected than your other fingers, and it's twice as likely to be broken.
Dr. Carol Lieberman is the author of Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them, and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. Are bad girls worse than bad boys?
They're both heartbreakers. That's what they have in common. Women seem to break guys' hearts by being more manipulative, whereas guys are manipulative, but there's more action involved. I mean, like, you know, they might cheat more, although the bad girls certainly do cheat.
Caleb Spaulding Atwood is the author of Quip Factory, Millions of Quips, Rips, Dingers, Zingers, and Barbs, and How You Can Create Many More.
Joey Adams, an old-time comedian, who said there's no such thing as a new joke, only old jokes in new settings with new characters. And that applies in large measure to quips as well. The difference between the two primarily is that the objective of a joke is to get laughs, whereas the objective of a quip is to express an opinion and get people to think, act, or react.
And, of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0083, was David Smith, the director of Okapi Consulting in South Africa. David set up the second largest radio network in Africa, which you can find at radiookapi.net. That's OKAPI.net. And there's also the radio network in Somalia, which is barkulan.com. That's barkulan.com. And David and I used to work together many, many years ago here in Canada at Radio Canada International. Nice of you, David, to do the opening slate for this edition of the Stuff File program. Thank you very, very, very much. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, a huge snake which bit a model's surgically enhanced breast later died from, believe it or not, silicone poisoning. Israeli model Orit Fox was posing with the snake at a photo shoot in Tel Aviv when it suddenly turned on her. She was holding the boa constrictor and went to lick its head when it suddenly tired of the attention and latched onto her left breasts. Footage of the incident on Spanish TV channel Telecinco has gone viral on YouTube. As the snake bit Fox, a man rushed over to help, of course, and remove the snake from her breast. The model was taken to a hospital in Hadera, northwest of Jerusalem, but later released after a tetanus shot and a few hours of observation. But the snake did not fare so well. Days later, Telecinco reported that the creature had died of silicone poisoning. Fox is regarded as Israel's version of Katy Price and has undergone several operations to enlarge her breasts. I don't know who should be more concerned about this story, women or men. And yes, by the way, you can go to the Stuff File program. I have put in a link to the footage so you can see it for yourself. Just go to the StuffFileProgram.com and click on the Stuff File page for this show, 0083, and you'll see the video. Okay, while we're on the topic of snake bites, under the headline of People with Issues, mental health practitioners writing in the January issue of the journal Substance Abuse described two patients who had recently arrived at a clinic in Ranchi, India, after allowing themselves to be bitten by cobras for recreational highs. Both men had decades-long substance abuse issues, especially involving opiates, and decided to try what they had heard about on the street. And I don't ever want to be on the same street they heard this from. One, age 44, bitten on the foot, experienced a blackout associated with a sense of well-being, lethargy, and sleepiness. The other, age 52, reported dizziness and blurred vision, followed by a heightened arousal and a sense of well-being, and apparently was so impressed that he returned to the snake charmer 2 weeks later for a second bite. Oh, he wants more. Now he's just becoming a pain in the asp. In Phoenix, an Arizona man has been sentenced to 3 years of probation for stabbing a man who refused to let him suck his blood. Maricopa County Superior Court said 24-year-old Aaron Homer of Chandler pleaded guilty to aggravated assault. 25-year-old Robert Maley once let his roommate suck his blood, but when Maley refused a second time on October the 4th, he was stabbed. Chandler police said Maley lived with Homer and his girlfriend. Maley said the two men were into vampire stuff. I guess this is like Lay's potato chips, you know? Nobody can stop at just once. How do you even agree to this the first time? That's what I want to know. And finally, in this section of Stuff File news, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, you know, when they coined the phrase, truth is stranger than fiction, they must have been thinking of this story. And I must start this story by saying that I search high and low on a regular basis to double-check the stories we bring to you here on the Stuff File program to make sure that they're not hoaxes. I checked, double-checked, and triple-checked this one, but I can't find any holes in it. It's just plain weird. Now, taking a cue from Cosmopolitan magazine of all places, Al-Qaeda has launched a women's magazine that mixes beauty and fashion tips with advice on suicide bombings. No kidding. I'm not making this up. I know this sounds like something right out of The Onion. Dubbed Jihad Cosmo, the magazine's front cover features the barrel of a submachine gun next to a picture of a woman in a veil. There are exclusive interviews with martyrs' wives who praise their husband's decision to die in suicide attacks. Readers are also told it is their duty to raise children to be mujahideen ready for jihad. The beauty section instructs women to stay indoors with their faces covered to keep a clear complexion. Another article urges readers to give their lives for the Islamist cause. A trailer for the next issue promises tips on skincare and how to wage electronic jihad. Now, James Brandon at the anti-extremism think tank Quilliam said, Al-Qaeda sees how effective magazines are at pushing the ideas of Western culture and want to try the same thing. That's just scary. And way too much information. Way too many facts. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, speaking of facts, here on the Stuff File program. You know, there are many questions in life to ponder, but lucky for us, Mark DiVincenzo has rooted out the answers to some of them. He is the author of Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb, and he joins us on the line right now. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. An interesting title for a book, Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb. Is it really?
It is. It is. A lot of people don't know this, but if you lost your pinky, you'd lose 50% of your hand strength. 50%. The downside to a pinky is it's on the end of your hand, it's less protected than your other fingers, and it's twice as likely to be broken. It's your chances are it's going to be broken twice as often as is your other pinky, just because it's on the end there.
Okay. Now, what made you come up with an idea like this for a book?
Well, I was a newspaper journalist for 24 years, and I've always thought that the truth is stranger and more interesting than fiction. And so I would compile these what I consider to be fascinating and surprising facts and share them with people, and I compiled hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, and thought that it would make a great book. So I'm happy to share these with your listeners.
Was that the focus of your first book, or which was Buy Ketchup in May and Fly at Noon?
The focus of that book is that there's a best time to do anything or buy anything or go anywhere. So okay. That book is all about the timing is everything, and there's a best time to do just about anything.
Now, one of the things in your current book, which is Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb, is something that I heard in the news just recently, and that is that hospitals are indeed worried about doctors who wear neckties.
Right. There's a debate going on in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, about whether doctors should wear ties, because these things are sponges for germs. You know, people are sneezing on them all day long and coughing on them. And there was a study done that showed that half the doctor's ties contain germs that could cause illnesses. And when they look at the neckties worn by security guards in hospitals, they found that only 10% of their ties contain germs that could cause illnesses.
Wow.
So there's really a big push now to have doctors get rid of their ties.
Another thing you found out in your book, and this I found rather odd, the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, but there's a creature that still refuses to cross the border. What creature is that?
Yeah, it's a red deer called a hornia. And, you know, the Berlin Wall, you think of it just in Berlin, but throughout Germany there was these electrical fences that went through forests and other places, and you couldn't cross these fences. And when the Berlin Wall came down, these fences came down too. And but these deer refused to cross the line. They the theory is that they've been using the same trails for centuries, and so they don't want to cross and use different trails. So they will not cross. They will not cross the line.
Everyone nowadays seems to have a computer, and the thing that is annoying with computers is that everything you do on a computer these days seems to have a password. You have dozens of them. So what is the safest computer password?
Well, you want a password that's at least 12 characters long, and you want a password that has numbers in it and letters in it. This is one of the biggest surprising facts for me when I was researching this. About 1% of all computer users use the password 123456. This is a hacker's dream. You know, if you have a password like that, you're just begging to have your computer hacked and maybe have your identity stolen. The second most popular password is 12345. The third is 123456789. The fourth is the word password. The fifth is I love you. So basically, you don't want to make it easy on people who want to mess with you. So the longest password you can get, and preferably one with numbers as well as letters, is preferred.
You know, I just spoke to somebody where I work here in Montreal at Global Television whose password was password. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's, you know, the hackers love people who do that. It makes it so easy for them.
First, his password was password. Second, he was telling me this. kind of defeats the purpose.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
How do you decide what does or does not go into the book? Because the world is filled with facts.
Yeah. Well, because I was a journalist for so long, one of the skills I developed was figuring out what the masses find interesting. The journalism word for it is news judgment. So I think I have a very good feel for what... for what a wide audience finds interesting, and that's what makes it into my books.
What was, for you, the biggest revelation in doing your research for this book?
I have to tell you, it's like each one of these facts just shocked me, but one that kind of sticks out in my mind is, in 2009, someone paid $28.3 million for a chair. That just blew me away. It just continues to blow me away. This is a chair that was owned by the late fashion designer Yves Saint Laurent. His partner had a big estate auction, and someone wanted this chair pretty badly, $28.3 million.
Do we know who has this chair and why they bought it?
No, it was an anonymous buyer, and And the chair is considered decorative art, but if you were to Google it, it would look like a leather chair to you. It looks like a fancy leather chair. Okay. I guess for $28.3 million, it better be fancy, right?
It should be. A lot of people, myself included, take multivitamins, and I just read the instructions on the bottle as to when to take it. But you're telling me that there is a best time to take multivitamins?
Yeah. You want to take them... you want to take them with food because they absorb into your body better with food. And if you have to nail it down, when is the exact best time of the day, it's probably breakfast time, because most of us that's one meal that we usually have at home, and home is where we have our vitamins. So breakfast is probably the best time of day to take a multivitamin.
And there's also apparently a best time of day to take a nap. I was unaware of this.
Yeah, there have been a lot of studies done involving astronauts and involving athletes and other people that show that early afternoon is the best time to take a nap. A lot of people are not able to do this, but there was another study done that showed 31% of employed people take a nap in the early afternoon. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it.
Isn't there some cultures where this is actually expected?
Yeah, there are in Europe and also in Latin America. That's happening. But that figure, 31% of employed people napping in the early afternoon, that's was in North America. So I don't know that we want our employees to nap, but that's what's happening. And there've been plenty of like very, very successful people who took naps in the early afternoon. Winston Churchill was famous for it. Lyndon Baines Johnson, United States president, was famous for his naps in the early afternoon as well. A lot of people, they get sleepy after they have lunch, and they attribute it to the food, but it's really our body temperatures. Our body temperatures are lower in the early afternoon, and that triggers sleepiness.
A similar question to one I asked earlier, and that is, with so many facts available, as you say, as a journalist, you know how to weed out the ones you want to put into a book, but even though you do know that, how do you know when a book is finished? How do you know when you say, oh, I need one more fact?
Well, you want to keep going, but thankfully the publishers give you deadlines. But when I reached my deadline, I kept sending them more facts, and I said, could you fit this in? Could you fit that in? Because, you know, I really and truly believe that the truth is stranger and more interesting than fiction. So I'm always finding these tidbits that that I find fascinating, and hopefully other people will as well.
So since you kept sending your publisher more facts, would that lead me to believe that there's another book in this vein down the road?
There is talk about doing a second edition of the book. We'll see if the public likes this one. That'll maybe trigger us to do another one.
The book is called, and the full title is, Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb, and 333 Other Surprising Facts That Will Make You Wealthier, Healthier, and Smarter Than Everyone Else. It's written by Mark DiVincenzo. And Mark, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Mark DiVincenzo, author of Your Pinky is More Powerful Than Your Thumb. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the Stuff File program page for this show, which is show number 0083, and you'll find links to Mark's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test later.
And still to come on the program, we will talk about bad girls and also meet the author of The Quip Factory. Plus, there's an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. And as they say, sell what you know. In December, a company in eastern Ukraine, a country known for hard drinking, announced a drinking buddy service in which, for the equivalent of about $18, it would supply a barroom companion for the evening qualified to discuss politics, sports, women, etc., and even to offer psychological counseling if appropriate. I don't know. Isn't another word for that enabler? I think so. Meanwhile, a group of chefs in China have come up with a very bizarre local specialty that they hope will catch on worldwide. Hope they're not holding their breath. The dish is eggs that have been boiled in schoolboys' urine. Ooh. The dish has been a local delicacy in Dongyang, eastern China, for thousands of years. How they kept this secret for so long is beyond me. Why they didn't continue to keep it a secret is also a mystery. Now, culture officials want to spread the good news about the recipe, which they hope to export to other countries. Hold on to your stomach. The urine is gathered from local schools, and the very best comes from boys under 10 years old, or so say the chefs. Chef Lu Ming said, "They pee in buckets, and we collect it fresh every day. Eggs are then boiled in the urine, first with their shells on, and then with them off for a day and a night before they're ready to be eaten." Ming claims the eggs are delicious and healthy. They stop fevers and can help you concentrate if you're feeling sluggish or sleepy. Wow. Given the choice, I would pick sluggish and sleepy. Okay. You kind of expect a little rambunctious behavior in the mosh pit of a heavy metal concert. But at the opera? In Chicago, a patron at the Lyric Opera went to see a performance of Carmen and left the show to go to the lobby to get opera glasses. But he was told by the usher that if he left, he wouldn't be allowed back in until intermission. This made 38-year-old Sergei Dembski very upset, but he left anyway, then tried to get back in. The usher again told him that he would have to wait until intermission to take his seat. Now, complaining that he had paid $200 to see the performance, Dembski then allegedly shoved the usher twice and went back into the auditorium. Police were called, and they arrested him. During intermission, of course, because anything else would be, you know, bad opera etiquette. Dembski was charged with misdemeanor battery and never got to see the end of the show. Okay, nobody tell him how it ends. Let's keep him in the dark, okay? Yeah. In Polk County, Florida, Joseph Florence was upset about how his neighbor's yard looked, so he decided to help him out and water it for him. His neighbor responded by calling the police. When they arrived and tried to arrest Florence for trespassing, there was a struggle, and Florence allegedly punched and choked the officers. None were seriously hurt, but they did defend themselves, and that's why Florence ended up with two very black eyes, and a busted lip. He was arrested and charged with battery to a law enforcement officer, assault on a law enforcement officer, resisting an officer with violence, depriving an officer of communication, and resisting an officer without violence. No charges, by the way, concerning the lawn watering. Okay, here's a neighbor with issues. You know, every neighborhood has one. This is probably the guy who, when you were a kid, if your ball went into his yard, consider it gone. It was done forever. This is also the guy that nobody went trick-or-treating at. Yeah. Anyway, in Linwood, Washington, a 52-year-old man set his Days Inn hotel room on fire after becoming convinced that he was sharing the room with Satan. Fire crews were called when smoke began pouring out of the second-floor room where the man was staying. Fortunately, the fire was contained to one room because of fire sprinklers, although about six rooms were damaged in all, as well as some guests' personal property. The man told police that he set the room on fire because Satan was in there and he wanted to protect the good people by setting the fire. Hotel officials told police the man had repeatedly called hotel employees the Antichrist and spawns of Satan. Okay, dude, let's get into your delusional head for just a moment, shall we? How dumb are you? Satan lives where? In hell. And what is hell made of? Fire! He likes it hot. How about a plan B? Okay? Rethink this. And finally, in the Stuff File news, at least in this section before we get to our next guest, there's a new entry for world's dumbest bank robber. That would be 49-year-old Nathan Wayne Pugh, who tried to hold up a Wells Fargo bank branch in Dallas last July. Now, the teller told Pugh that before she turned over the money, she would need to see two forms of ID. Amazingly, the idiot complied and showed her his Wells Fargo debit card and a state ID card. He was captured as he tried to flee with $800. Pugh was already on parole for two aggravated robberies at the time, so after pleading guilty to bank robbery, he was sentenced to 8 years in prison. Believe it or not, he's not the idiot of the day. That comes later. What comes right now, though, is our next guest here on the Stuff File program. Dr. Carol Lieberman is the host of Dr. Carol's Couch, a weekly internet radio show on voiceamerica.com. She is also the author of Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them, and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. She joins us on the line from California. Hi, Dr. Carol.
Hi there.
Thanks for being on the show with us. We often on programs talk about bad boys and the women that love them. So I find it unique that someone talks about bad girls.
Well, funny you should say that. My first book was Bad Boys, Why We Love Them, How to Live with Them, and When to Leave Them. And when I was going around talking about that book, guys would say to me, when are you going to write about bad girls? So this is for you.
Okay. So is there really...
Well, actually, I should clarify that. It's not just for you. It's not just for men. It's also for women, particularly good girls, who are tired of losing their men to bad girls.
Now... I know there's the ongoing battle of the sexes, so which is more dangerous, the bad girl or the bad guy?
Well, they're both heartbreakers. That's what they have in common. And, you know, they can both break each other's heart equally badly. But, you know, for men, it's interesting, when bad boys, and I define 12 different types of bad boys, just like I define 12 different types of bad girls. I call them the dozen dangerous damsels in my book, Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them, and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. Women seem to be more manipulative, break guys' hearts by being more manipulative, whereas guys are manipulative, but they... there's more action involved. I mean, like, you know, they might cheat more, although the bad girls certainly do cheat. In fact, I don't have a separate category for cheaters because all 12 types of bad girls can and do often cheat. I think the thing that was amazing, I interviewed over 100 men for Bad Girls, and what was amazing was just how hurt they still were. I mean, these men were different ages. They lived all over. Some even out of the country, and they had different occupations and so on. But some of them were still in a bad girl relationship, and others had been in a bad girl relationship in college, and they were, let's say, 45. And these relationships, whatever age they were when they had them, are still breaking their heart today. You know, they would talk to me, tell me about their stories, and their voice would be cracking. They would still, and they'd remember the details of everything. And women don't realize that, just how much these things affect men, because men don't show that.
Well, I'm going to sell out my gender right now and say that I think that women are, to a certain degree, more intelligent than men, and therefore, and therefore, make a more dangerous bad girl than a guy makes a bad guy. That's just the way I feel.
Well, that kind of goes along with what I was saying about the bad girls being manipulative. Let me tell you what I mean by a bad girl. A bad girl, you know, isn't a trashy girl or isn't an evil girl. It's a woman who has grown up being hurt by men in her life, starting with her father, having a dysfunctional relationship with her father. And she then goes on to date, And she typically picks bad boys who then break her heart. And at some point, she decides that she must not be lovable. She's not going to be able to get a man to love her. So instead, she decides to go after something else from the guy. And I'll tell you what the 12 types of bad girls are, so this will be clearer. There's the gold digger, and of course there are more of those these days. The addict, the sex siren, the sexual withholder, the married woman on the prowl, the commitment phobe, the husband hunter and trapper, the husband stealer, the ultimate damsel in distress, the cougar, the ball buster, and the bad girl scorned.
Wow. Now, again, from one of the things you just brought up, you say that the bad girl sometimes looks for, or the girl looks for bad guys to have a relationship with, and that guys seem hurt. That's the other point.
Well, wait. The bad boys that she usually has the relationship
right.
with is when she's starting out, you know, after when she's first dating and so on. I mean, it's before she becomes really bad. It's because of these broken hearts, one on top of the other, that she takes her heart off her sleeve, she hardens her heart, and she goes after these other things. You know, the gold digger goes after gold, the addict goes after an enabler, and so on.
Yeah, but again, the difference between men and women, from my estimation, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, is that I think women date guys that are like a fixer-upper, and they want to change them. And guys date women that they hope will never change. And both are wrong. Both are wrong. And that's why you have these guys who are hurt by somebody who's done them wrong 25 years ago, because they never thought it would happen to them. But women always think that a guy's going to turn on her.
Well, wait a second. Okay, but I see what you're saying. Well, the bad girls that
right.
these women, that these men told me about, where they were hurt, you know, what I was just saying, they didn't want, I mean, at some point they realized what she was doing to them. It's not that they, I mean, in most cases they weren't together because she had already broken their heart, or in the cases where they were still together, she was still breaking their heart. You know, a ball buster, for example, who was driving this man crazy, and they've been married 25 years or so. Or another woman who, you know, he was in a relationship with her, but he was trying to get rid of her because of how much she was. She was also a ball buster, actually. I guess it's, but you know, it's a good, yes. Women do hope that men will change. They do try to. In fact, I have. That's one of the types of fixer upper lover. One of the types of bad boys that women want to change. But this is different. These are women who are, because they don't think they're going to be loved, they are out there. You know, I have a test in the book called the sitting duck test, and men take the test, and they see how much of a sitting duck they are, how vulnerable they are. And it has to do with things in their childhood. It has to do with typically not having a good relationship with his father, a father who wasn't really there or not really occupying himself with raising the son. And so the man grows up feeling like he's inadequate as a man. And that's the bottom line. These men, even though a lot of them were good-looking or successful and or had all kinds of other great traits, there were some insecurities inside that the bad girls knew just how to hone in on. They wouldn't just pick anybody to try to trap, you know, for whatever they wanted. They would know the guys that would be most vulnerable to them.
Is there a male equivalent to the girl who dates what we referred to earlier as a fixer-upper? And if there is, I think I have a name for it, Pygmalion yeah. Complex.
Well, yeah, that's a good name. Actually, that's one of the bad girls, the ultimate damsel in distress.
Ah.
You know, to some degree, all the bad girls to some degree are damsels in distress because they need something, they want something. But the ultimate damsel in distress, you know, is really wants to suck the guy in to fix up her life. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the book is written for both. For girls to read, for men to read, for women to read.
Right.
Did you have somebody primarily in mind when you wrote this book as your audience?
Well, you know, no, both, actually, because Because what I was trying, because the, as I'm sure you know, the love jungle is getting wilder. It's getting tougher out there to find love. And I see that every day. And women, you know, have a hard time because a lot of women still buy into that false notion that if they, you know, are just good, a man will see how wonderful they are and, who, you know, they'll just pick them and date them and marry them and so on. And they don't have to make too much effort except to just still be good. Where, in the meantime, they're seeing their men being lured away from them by these bad girls. And so so this was to the last chapter. I mean, you know, there's a chapter for each of the 12 types of bad girls, and there's a beginning chapter that explains the whole phenomenon and has the test, also a bad girl test for women. And then in the last chapter, called The Bad Girl Secrets to a Man's Heart, that's for the good girls especially. I distill down from the stories that I gathered from these 100 men, I distill down and I include the best stories in the book, and I distilled them down to find out what were the traits, what were the things that bad girls did that made them fall helplessly in love with them. And I describe this, you know, they've read the stories, they see how it worked, and now I sort of crystallize it for good girls so they can see what they need to do. And I'm not trying to turn good girls into any of these 12 types, certainly, but I'm getting them to kind of, trying to get them to sort of wake up and realize that they can't, you know, be lazy about how they look or about how they act, or they can't hide in a closet, or they can't, you know, there are all kinds of things that the bad girls are out there doing that are making the men fall head over heels for them.
Hmm. The book is called Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. It's written by Dr. Carol Lieberman, and you can also listen to her weekly internet show on voiceamerica.com called Dr. Carol's Couch. Dr. Carol, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. There's so much more we could go into. I hope you have a chance to come back on the show one time.
Sure, absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, host of Dr. Carol's Couch on voiceamerica.com and the author of Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the Stuff File program page for this show, which is show number 0083, and you'll find links to Dr. Carol's website, plus links to also amazon.com and amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. When I say, here comes the judge, what do you think of? I have to admit, I think of an old TV show called Laugh-In and a comedian named Flip Wilson who played a high-spirited judge. Wilson wasn't a real judge, of course, and when most of us think of a judge, an image of a man or woman in a long robe usually comes to mind. No matter how we picture them, we all want judges to be fair and wise. It's a tough job, and in recent years, many states have tried to help judges by creating special courts for complex issues. Today, there are special courts for tax matters, workers' compensation claims, and even family disputes. But let's be fair, for some of the most complex issues, those involving medical disputes, there are still no special courts. That could be changing, though. The White House recently sent a budget to Congress that includes funding for states that would like to create special health courts. I believe these courts could greatly improve health care and cut down on costly defensive medicine. Learn more. Go to my website at bobdorigojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother.
You you're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about quips, plus we have an idiot of the day, but we've got a couple more Stuff File stories to get to before that point. In Boise, Idaho, technology proved to be 21-year-old Alexander A. Welsh's undoing. He's now facing 5 years in prison, all because of an app he got for his smartphone. Apparently, there's a police car lights app that flashes blue and red lights from your phone. Welsh allegedly used the app to try to pull over another car. A driver told police that a car behind them flashed a blue and red light, and when they pulled over, the car with the flashing lights pulled up behind them briefly and then drove away. That made the first driver suspicious, so he followed the other car and called police. Police eventually found both cars, and it was when they were talking to Welsh that police found the application on his Verizon cell phone that flashed a blue and red light. At that point, he was arrested. Here's a thought. Why don't we make it illegal to make an app like that? Just saying. And I really like this kid. An enterprising young 13-year-old boy from Marysville, Ohio, has launched his own line of scented candles for men. The manly fragrances include bacon, New York-style pizza, sawdust, and the smell of a fresh leather baseball mitt. Hart Maine says he got the idea for his man cans when he was making fun of his sister for selling candles with girly scents for a school fundraiser. Hart launched his company last Thanksgiving, making the candles using scores of empty cans from soup he had donated to soup kitchens. So far, he sold 500 candles at $5 a pop and has made enough money to buy himself a really nice bike. Now that's the entrepreneurial spirit that nations were built on. This kid will probably go far in life. I like him a lot. Let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Caleb Spaulding Atwood's new book, Quip Factory, Millions of Quips, Rips, Dingers, Zingers, and Barbs, and How You Can Create Many More, provides literally millions of quips and explains step by step how you can create thousands more on your own. Why is a book like this necessary? Well, we find out from the author who joins us on the line right now. Hi, Caleb.
How do you do?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So you've come up with this book on quips. Why did you feel the need to write this book?
Well, it's sort of an accumulation over my lifetime. I've done a lot of public speaking. I've taught a lot of seminars and workshops, both for colleges and universities and also for corporations and associations and so on. And most of them have been day-long or sometimes several-day-long programs. And you really have to have some things to brighten those up, no matter how much information you have. So I started collecting quips that I thought were so clever that I wished I had thought of them. And that went on, and even still, I was missing many, many of them, and I just simply forget them. I think most of us hear them, and a few minutes later, they're gone. So I made a more serious effort, and finally decided it'd be really fun to have a list of them, a book full of them, if you will. Certainly, I wish I'd had it. And so I started out with the objective of creating, or collecting, I should say, 1,000 really interesting quips and publishing it as a guide or an aid or whatever you want to call it for speakers and writers and everyday conversationalists.
Well,
that's how it all got started.
Well, in your estimation, what's more valuable, the having a memory bank loaded with quips ready for the ready, as it were, or being inventive and coming up with your own? Or does it make a difference in your estimation?
Well, it's an awful lot of fun to come up with your own. And in the book, it explains exactly how you can do that. Let me back up a little bit to Joey Adams, an old-time comedian, who said there's no such thing as a new joke, only old jokes in new settings with new characters. And that applies in large measure to quips as well. The difference between the two primarily is that the objective of a joke is to get laughs, whereas the objective as a quip is to express an opinion and get people to think, act, or react.
Okay, well, first of all, let's start at the very basic. And the very definition of the word quip.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Oh, golly, it's variously defined as all kinds of things. Let's see. Clever, curious, eccentric, funny, sarcastic, taunting, or witty characterizations, responses, or verbal thrusts that amuse, tease, taunt, denigrate, or eviscerate things considered inane, insane, wacky, weird, or worse. So it's kind of wide open.
And the reason why I bring that up, because in that description you just gave, in this day and age when as we've become so politically correct, people seem to have less of a sense of humor, sometimes a quip can be a dangerous thing.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I'll give you one that I use in the book. It's become pretty popular. I keep hearing it from other people now. And I'll go back to what I was just saying about the objective of a joke versus the objective of a quip. Joke, Mary had a little lamb and her doctor fainted. No message there. It's just a joke, a very old and not very funny one, but nonetheless a joke. Now, Mary had a little lamb and Al Gore blamed it on global warming is a different deal altogether. That's certainly expressing an opinion.
Right.
And the other thing about quips is the same quip can range from being a dinger, sort of a tease or a taunt, to an evisceration. It depends on the tone of voice and the attitude of the person making it. For example, a friend of Al Gore teasing him about that same thing might even get a chuckle out of Al. On the other hand, a fierce opponent of global warming who thinks it's a major con job and that he's a reincarnation of P.T. Barnum would draw an entirely different reaction from Gore. So a lot of people might think that's funny, but I doubt that Al Gore would under those circumstances. So a single quip can have a wide variety of meanings depending upon the intention of the person making it.
In taking a look at your website at www.quipfactory.net, I believe there's a little story there, a little blurb about somebody you made a quip to when you were back in school, which leads me to ask the question, were you the kind of kid, and I say this from knowledge from myself, were you the kind of kid who would say a quip or two, make a remark or two, and get yourself in trouble when you were in school? Because I certainly was.
I've said a few things that got me in trouble, yes. That was my first quip that I can remember anyway in the fifth or sixth grade. And it was kind of fun. I still think it's probably one of the better ones I ever got off. But to answer your question more directly, no, I occasionally would shoot my mouth off and think better of it later.
Well, now that you've alluded to, we've got to mention what that quip was that you said back in school.
Oh, all right. I was in a summer school art class with a beautiful, beautiful young gal. I suppose I shouldn't mention her name now. We were sharing the same table, and she decided that my artwork needed some embellishment and proceeded to do it. And I returned the favor, and that became a contest between us, and she finally got really spirited because I guess I must have been better at embellishing than she was. And she got really irritated and said, "When you grow up, you're probably going to marry somebody who's mean and ugly." And I said, "Is that a proposal?" And by then, the whole class is laughing. But as I recall, she didn't.
It also sounds like the kind of thing Winston Churchill would have said, because he was great with a lot of quips.
Yeah, I cite several of his in the book. There are a number of people who have been great quipsters, and we go back, a long way. I'm trying to think who it was now who said that somebody had no redeeming faults.
Well, it's interesting, though, that you were someone who got in a little bit of trouble when you were in school, as did I, and yet here we are both public speakers. So what does that tell you?
You could draw a lot of conclusions, I guess. Indefatigable wisecracker or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. Who do you see as your most your target audience for this particular book?
Really, it's pretty broad. Obviously, writers, public speakers, but really anybody who'd like to brighten and enliven their conversation would probably enjoy it. Or, as one of the reviewers said, if you just want something that's fun to read. So it's the audience is almost unlimited, and any English speaker.
Do you find that you can teach someone, because you offer up quips in your book, but do you also explain, as I mentioned in the introduction, step by step, how to create your own? So a quipster can be taught. A quipster isn't necessarily born.
Oh, it's easy. It's easy to create them once you understand how. And I didn't learn this until I really got into this whole process of trying to find my initial thousand. But go back to Joey Adams' comment. There are no new jokes. There are no new quips. What does he mean by that? That means that basically there are no jokes, but they're all adaptations of previous jokes. Same holds for quips. So if you want to create a quip, find one you think is interesting, reduce it to a formula, and then substitute different words for the various elements in the formula. I have a recent example. I just had the opportunity to read Mark Twain's autobiography, and there's a terrific quip in that. He said his parents weren't conspicuously honest. What a funny statement when you stop and think about it. You can substitute almost any favorable trait for honest, and it works.
Hmm.
It wasn't conspicuously friendly, courteous, kind. The boys got out there, so or weren't conspicuously sober, which is kind of a funny one. And on top of that, not only can you substitute literally dozens of positive traits, you can also substitute negative traits. So-and-so isn't conspicuously dishonest. Message is, he's not honest. He didn't make a show of it. So that particular quip has great opportunity for adaptation. Now, conspicuously can be replaced also. For example, my favorite alternative is intolerably. Charlie isn't intolerably sober, for example, to use that same example. That's what you can do. You can take these things, and in some cases, there's one that quip in the book that I analyze that can be used to create literally millions, or frankly, tens of millions, of different quips. And that's, Gloria Steinem's famous quip from 1976, no less, when she was one of the leaders of the then nascent women's lib movement, and she said, "A woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle." Well, does a fish need a bicycle? No. But other than the basics like food and water and oxygen and security and health and what have you, a fish doesn't need anything. So almost any other object can be substituted for bicycle. And not only objects, but illnesses. Fish need cancer or ulcers and so on? No, of course not. And it goes on. Obviously, any kind of clothing, even occupations. Does a fish need a butcher? How about a taxidermist or proctologist? There are thousands of things you can use. You can replace bicycle with in that quip.
Well, the book is called Quip Factory, Millions of Quips, Rips, Dingers, Zingers, and Barbs, and How You Can Create Many More. It's written by Caleb Spaulding Atwood. And Caleb, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. The English language certainly is a fascinating weapon, it could be, and also source.
Well, words make wonderful toys. Enjoyed being with you and appreciate your interest.
Caleb Spaulding Atwood, author of Quip Factory, Millions of Quips, Rips, Dingers, Zingers, and Barbs, and How You Can Create Many More. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the Stuff File program page for this show, which is show number 0083, and you'll find links to Caleb's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
The Stuff File.
We're almost finished this edition of the Stuff File program, but first we have an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Another negative cash flow robbery occurred in February in Kansas City, Missouri, as an unidentified man tried to distract the clerk at the gun store by laying $40 on the counter to buy a box of bullets, then pulling a gun and demanding all of the store's money. The clerk thwarted the robbery by pulling a gun of his own, not surprisingly, since it was a gun store, and scaring the robber off while the $40 remained on the counter. Yeah. Why would anybody try to rob a gun store at gunpoint? One reason, and one reason only, they're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0083. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0083. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can find me also on Twitter and Facebook as P.A. Holder. Don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can find a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. And I hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.